Welcome to the A-News Podcast. This is episode 47 for January 19, 2018. This podcast covers anarchist activity, ideas, and conversations from the previous week. It's designed to be useful to anarchists and the anarcho-curious. Give us feedback and constructive criticism at our email address, podcast@anarchistnews.org. For more information and usually some good commentary, go to the nonsectarian anarchistnews.org. Editorial. But first, a public service announcement. Chisel is not always the one who writes the editorials she reads. Check the notes to see if someone else is credited, and she'll try to make it more clear in the podcast itself also. To clarify, 2 weeks ago the editorial was written by someone calling himself Some Anarchist, and last week's was written by A. Muse. Both appreciate the kind words about their editorials. This editorial is by Chisel. The title is Today's Authenticity. Authentic is a minor code word. I've heard it used to describe someone who is real, with a capital R, real in the way that leftists think that workers are real, especially blue-collar workers, or people of color are real, especially those who are street, or other oppressed people are real, especially those with experiences far from white middle-class culture. But authentic is also a word that describes something that seems significant to me and important to these times. 2 weeks ago, I narrated an editorial by someone calling himself Some Anarchist that mentioned someone who, after badly screwing up, is now using terms of restitution and healing, words and language that are to signify that he has learned important lessons and can be trusted again. Some Anarchist was, of course, doubting that this someone was being authentic in their remorse or their change of heart. This is the nightmare of those who focus on language as an indication of reality, when someone is smart enough to use the words to manipulate instead of with sincerity. One of my favorite A-News trolls, I assume it's one person, but it could be more, writes posts as three well-known anarchist or semi-anarchist characters, and a less A-News savvy reader had to be informed that one of these posts was in fact satire. Longtime A-News readers will remember the first time this happened on A-News, with a birth and mothering journal that went from being anarchist to not. Someone started posting under the name of one of the editors. Sometimes it was impossible to tell when or if it was actually Megan Guthrie writing the comment. While I consider this kind of online activity a new art form, both funny and terrible, there is no doubt that it is part of a troubling trend as well as one that is in some ways liberating. The internet allows people to express how they are different from who they seem to be to those around them. It also allows people to express who they feel they really are. I am thinking about the possibility that call-out culture is one result of this disconnect of communication from what we look like. Call-out culture could be described as a scramble for markers of belief, for a desperate clinging to specific words in the face of the opacity of identity in today's world. It has to focus on things that are shallow, like knowing the exact right words, because it has to be easy. Anarchists have always had a weak spot for those who use the right words. Witness the people who still want to believe that liberals and communists can be relied on to make change we care about, simply because they use words we recognize. If we rely more and more on words to determine who we trust and who we don't, we seem to be setting ourselves up, again, for a nasty fall. Feel so good I can't be sure. Are you for real? Are you really for real? Is this really for real? What's new this week? Italy. Update on the repression against anarchists in Naples. From Insurrection News. Quote, the pacification of political movements has led to the almost total disappearance from our society of any revolutionary aspiration, replaced with a frenetic rush to occupy the warm and comfortable seats that power offers. This has led to a fierce struggle, often without quarter, to follow the current politician, who is raised to rank of political revolutionary in order to guarantee, quote, antagonistic politicians, an area of political acceptability within the institutions. As a result, we witness the voluntary cancellation of any form of opposition in favor of cooperation and often collaboration with a political system that until recently was considered hostile. The huge amount of resources that the police and magistracy are able to call upon can be used entirely and with minimal resistance to annihilate a social enemy that now have increasingly reduced spaces to maneuver in. Specifically, the anarchist movement is the one that is hardest hit by this repressive attack launched by the state. All this has been made possible by the wide-scale use of so-called criminal association laws that have continuously been adapted to the socio-political structure of the movement. At present, dozens of comrades are facing prison sentences, are imprisoned or under house arrest, and just as many are subject to various forms of precautionary measures such as signing on, residential restrictions, special surveillance, etc. And an unknown number, certainly very high, are under investigation by various prosecutors scattered throughout Italy. Among these, the Naples prosecutor, who has been struggling for years without much success to make his own infamous contribution, made his voice heard at the beginning of December. Unquote.
France, ZED declares victory as airport plan dropped, from freedomnews.org.uk. Quote, in a communique, the famous horizontal community Zone à défendre, ZED, has declared a historic victory and called for expropriated peasants and inhabitants to be able to fully recover their rights as soon as possible. The entirety of the land area devoted to the airport project, 1,650 hectares of land declared as being of public utility in 2008, currently belongs to the state, with the exception of three roads crossing it. The ZAD has argued that this land should be kept in public hands and rather than turned into an airport, put into forms of public lease for the benefit of the community and wildlife. Responding to reports that the Notre-Dame-du-Land airport project is now officially dead, reps for the 10-year environmental occupation campaign wrote, this afternoon, the government has just announced the abandonment of the project. We note that the declaration of public utility, which is key to enabling large projects to function and compulsory purchases to happen, will not officially be extended. The project will definitely be null and void on February 8th, unquote. Good news.
June 11th, International Day of Solidarity with Marius Mason and all long-term anarchist prisoners, from Contra Info. This is a call-out from the June 11th committee. Quote, we are asking you to get in touch with us if you know prisoners who would be a good fit and would like to be included with June 11th. When possible, we desire a dialogue with supporters so we can more deeply explore how we can support them and keep their voices in our activities. Please help us to translate and disseminate this message as far as possible. We want to hear from you. June11th@riseup.net, unquote.
Belgium, analysis of the wave of arson attacks against the arms industry, from L'Imprévu, an anarchist newspaper from Brussels, by Anonymous, translated by Insurrection News. Quote, these attacks create a breach in the atmosphere of silent complicity. The submissive acceptance of a so-called morbid fatality in the face of these wars and the control of our lives that is intensifying daily. They show that the omnipotence of the military is not infallible. They also show that a struggle against the war of power and against social peace is not limited to empty words or symbolic actions, petitions or actions of political pressure, that it is possible to strike blows where they do not expect them, by oneself and without waiting. Unquote.
Back to the city, from Commune Life blog by G. Paul Blundell. This is an article that argues for the viability of urban group housing / communal living. Quote, fundamentally, there is one difference that separates rural areas from urban ones, population density. Many communes and intentional communities settle in the country insofar as they desire to build a new world divorced from mainstream society. This makes sense. With fewer people occupying the land, there's more room to build and more room between you and your opinionated neighbors. Over the decade that I lived at rural Acorn Community in central Virginia, this is certainly the reality that I experienced. The abundance of space, both physical and cultural, provided a lot of room to grow a little utopia and keep it insulated from the corrosive effects the mainstream would have on it. However, there are abundances in many places if you can appreciate and cultivate them. When I first moved to Acorn in 2005, I came looking for proof that a better world was possible. My political blossoming in college during the peak of the anti-corporate globalization movement and the run-up to the Iraq War saw me immersing myself in the history and theory of anarchism. But in conversation after conversation, my passionate insistence that we could, as a society, thrive without constantly brutalizing and dominating each other was met with skeptical requests to cough up the proof that my nice ideas could stand up to harsh reality. When I discovered Twin Oaks and then Acorn, all quite by accident, I knew immediately what I had stumbled upon and that the egalitarian communes movement was my life's work. Unquote. It's nice to hear that Twin Oaks et al. Is doing well.
Santiago, Chile. Coordinated incendiary and explosive attacks against five churches on the eve of the Pope's official visit, from Insurrection News. A brief communique regarding three noise bombs. Quote, we reclaim our lives whenever we mock authority. Everyone has their own way of seeing things, whether they agree with each other or not. But even so, with us, disorder has always been where we meet, a point where emotions come to life. This is what we like, what we want, and what we look for, always with an idea behind it. Unquote.
Chile, anarchist prisoner Tamara Sold, badly wounded and in isolation for attempted escape. From Insurrection News. Brief announcement on this escape attempt and the fucked up consequences. Quote, January 13, 2018. Urgent. We were informed this morning that Tamara Sold was involved in an attempted escape from Valparaiso prison. She is badly wounded, was brutally beaten by gendarmerie, and is currently in isolation, incommunicado, and awaiting transfer to another prison. Unquote.
Against the world builders, eco-extremists respond to critics from the Anarchist Library. This is an extensive and detailed response to the criticisms leveled against the first issue of the journal ATASA, Black Seed, and eco-extremists in general. Some might say it is too detailed, in fact. It specifically addresses the 50-page exercise in bad faith that was the best that the revilers of eco-extremism could offer. Of course, these revilers have already demonstrated and redemonstrated that they don't speak the same language, and so are closed to whatever reasonableness is available herein. Nonetheless, there are people who can still listen, and perhaps this will reach some of them. Provides convenient topic headings, including rape, misogyny, attacks on anarchists, Black Seed 5, fascism, and conclusion.
Nothing is over, everything continues, from Fire on the Horizon. This project is disbanding, although the site will continue as an archive. Quote, we still consider counter-information important. Who knows, in the future, maybe we will be involved again, along with spreading counter-information as an important contribution to anarchy in conflict with all the domination apparatus. When words and online presence do not match up to the active contribution to attacks in the real world, then we risk contributing to the spectacle and becoming, at best, keyboard warriors of irrelevance. What we feel is needed now, at least personally for us as individuals who have now disbanded as a group, is more comrades contributing to physical projects that attack the rising tide of the technological, scientific, industrial, military prison complex, along with exploitative globalized capitalism, the passive societies, the police states, murdering borders, rising fascism, a whole civilization laying waste to the shrinking wild earth we inhabit, and authority that not only exists as a physical enemy, but also dwells within us. Unquote.
Greece, responsibility claim from Popular Fighters Group for the bombing of the Athens Court of Appeals from Insurrection News. Aside from taking responsibility for a bombing, this piece from Greece talks about international economics, a pending memorandum, and the need for the working class to organize, resist, and fight back. Quote, obviously, they think that they are addressing lobotomized people and not people with flesh, bones, and souls who live by the skin of their teeth in unemployment and Middle Ages conditions. Employers have many reasons to rejoice. Reduced wages, flexible working relationships, marginalization of sectoral and collective labor agreements, and the generalization of individual and business contracts, the deprivation of labor rights, trade union barriers, and additional obstacles are institutionalized against the right to strike. Many other memorandum measures serve the fixed class interests of capital. If we do not resist the plundering of our lives, the memorandum will remain a permanent nightmare, since at the end of the program in August 2018, the tight budgetary policy of high surpluses, 3.5% of GDP by 2022 and 2% from 2023 to 2060, will remain, while Brussels is preparing a secret memorandum through the reform clause, unquote.
Somewhere away from it all, from mainstreamiest news, New York Times. A positive article on people who are living more or less off the grid that has already been criticized on A-News because it doesn't feature photos of dark-skinned people or obviously physically disadvantaged folks. Quote, though the members of this community all know each other, they reside in scattered locations, some shared, some individual. Several of the residents have an interest in anarchy and far-left politics, but there are no explicit ideologies that govern the inhabitants. Instead, they abide by unwritten guidelines of shared emotional and physical space. Unquote. Continuing, quote, over the duration of Fields' project, the fallibility of the description off the grid became apparent. Beyond the fact that some of those pictured here do have limited access to various water and power supplies, the phrase suggests a total exit from society and a life of isolation. Emmy Motiv, 31, instead emphasized the intense, even abrasive forms of intimacy that living in this way instigates. Quote, "It's funny because most people think of rural living as really isolated, and I often feel overwhelmed and overstimulated by the number of people in that little house." Unquote.
On Planning and Prudhomme, plus new Kropotkin translation from infoshop.org by Anarcho. A long conversational style article in defense of Proudhon and his idea of labor notes, and a bit on how Kropotkin's thought fits in from the middle of the essay. Quote, "In summary, I have indicated via Engels how the market's divergence between price and value provides information which allows producers to meet demand. This is called the law of value by Proudhon, a term utilized by Marx and Marxists without acknowledgement, and which remains at the heart of his notion of constituted value. This is why he did not advocate labor notes, for he recognized the need of competition to constitute value and drive down prices to labor value. The abolition of property, the socialization of the means of production, would end wage labor as associated producers would exchange the products of their labor, and property needed to be socialized to stop workers' associations from hiring new workers, and so reintroducing wage labor. Use would be divided, and so workers would control their labor and its product, but ownership would be undivided. This would end exploitation, for workers would not have to share the product of their labor with owners." So it is obvious how Proudhon laid the foundations for both collectivists and communist anarchism, unquote. If you're interested in Proudhon and haven't yet, we strongly recommend checking out Sean Wilber's site, contrun.libertarian-labyrinth.org.
Interview with Kevin Doyle about The Worms That Saved the World from AK Press. The Worms That Saved the World is an illustrated kids book written by Doyle, who talks about a dearth of content in the market. Quote, "Our book is about the environment and standing up for your rights. In reality, there's not that much around in the book market that tackles those sorts of things and ideas, not for the age group we're interested in, anyway. Loads of books about princes and princesses, of course. Maybe we can help reboot an old trend. Fun books about rebellion." Unquote.
Naples, Anarchists Under Pressure as Anti-Mafia Tactics Employed in Crackdown, from Freedom News, from a translation by Insurrection News. Quote, "Bearing down on insurrectionist groups, the Italian state is using its organized crime units to cast a wide net and pressure anarchists nationwide. In this article by Naples activists, they look at the failed attempt at a precautionary arrest of 20 alleged members of the informal anarchist federation and the chilling effects of an investigation which has encompassed wide swaths of the libertarian movement. The latest initiative was launched less than a month after the start of the linked scripta manent trials of alleged informal anarchist members for various arsons and at least one kneecapping of a CEO. The pacification of political movements has led to the almost total disappearance from our society of any revolutionary aspiration, replaced with a frenetic rush to occupy the warm and comfortable seats the power offers. This has led to a fierce struggle, often without quarter, to follow the latest politician who is raised to rank of political revolutionary in order to guarantee antagonistic politicians in an area of political acceptability within the institutions." Unquote.
Melbourne, Australia, banner action in solidarity with anarchist prisoner Lisa, from Insurrection News. Brief announcement with pictures of a solidarity action. Quote, "On 15 January 2018, a group of anarchists in NARM, so-called Melbourne, Australia, undertook a solidarity statement effort in support of our anarchist comrade, Achin Lisa, who is serving 7.5 years imprisonment in Germany for a bank expropriation in the city of Aachen. At a prominent tourist attraction, St. Patrick's Catholic Cathedral, the cathedral church of the Roman Catholic Archdiocese of Melbourne and seat of its Archbishop Dennis Harta, we displayed a banner reading, Seditious Solidarity with Achin Lisa, Uncompromising Resistance to Patriarchy, Church, Capital, and State. We then hung the banner in a predominant and highly visible position on the gates of the State Parliament House." Unquote.
Book review, Pagan Anarchism, from barbarically.wordpress.com by Rudster. Quote, "The rest of the book talks in parts about anarchist practice in action. It covers a bit on the Rojava Revolution, anarcho-syndicalism, and related themes. Thompson clearly holds firm to leftist values, and for those who are also radical leftists, I'm sure there would be many agreements throughout this particular work. He continues discussing and giving examples of how paganism and anarchism work together and serve one another. My favorite chapter was the last one, in which he talks about how Dionysus, or the Roman Bacchus, was used as a symbol and patron of resistance in antiquity. I also appreciated how he talks about making the gods worldly and how complex and mystical their relationships to us can be. Unquote.
The Enigmatic Anarchist from JacobinMag.com. This is Anarchist News' second interview of Jennifer Jones, author of The Goddess of Anarchy, The Life and Times of Lucy Parsons, and American Radical. As did the first one, it speaks to the contradictions of Parsons' behavior and character and her perhaps surprising, perhaps predictable, disappearing from history. Quote, question, how did Lucy's character and politics contrast with the popular understanding and depiction of anarchists at the time? Answer. First, I should note that the popular understanding and depictions of anarchists at the time, especially after the Haymarket bombing, promoted certain stereotypes that proved enduring. Editors, reporters, clergy, politicians, social reformers, and political cartoonists all portrayed the anarchist as a bewhiskered, unkempt, wild-eyed man ready to lob a canister of dynamite into an unsuspecting crowd of innocent men, women, and children. This was one of the reasons that people were so fascinated by Lucy Parsons. Elegant and dignified in her bearing, always dressed in the latest fashion, she upended this stereotype in a dramatic way. The late 19th century saw a fracturing of the anarchist persuasion. It would be difficult to call it a movement. Parsons and her close comrades represented what would come to be called anarcho-syndicalism. They believed that trade unions were the embryos of the good society. In contrast, some anarchists were extreme individualists who shied away from associations of all kinds, even voluntary ones. Goldman represented what we might call cultural anarchism, with its emphasis on the free expression of not only ideas, but also sexual feelings and artistic impulses. Finally, the German anarchist Johann Most promoted the idea that the Attentat, or propaganda of the deed, was the key to revolution, a brief, violent act that would galvanize the masses and serve as a catalyst for the overthrow of capitalism. Unquote.
Santiago, Chile. Incendiary attack against a Trans-Santiago bus by Huichafe Matias Catrileo Autonomous Group. From Insurrection News, a brief communique. Quote, arriving on the night of January 10 with autonomous desires in place, we left an incendiary device on a Route 1 Trans-Santiago bus, activating it in the vicinity of Franklin and San Francisco streets. At the moment that the fire began to spread, the sheep driver suffocated it with a fire extinguisher, burning only the rear of this transport symbol of the commercial logic, delegator of times and pulses, adapting the daily to a more narrow social control, providing the comforts that are typical of an alienating culture. However, our actions violate these times, these comforts, by choosing with horizontality and without leaders where and when to do and undo the black intentions of permanent conflict against everything that is positioned as authority. Unquote.
Prosecutors are dropping most of the cases against people arrested on Trump's inauguration day, from BuzzFeed. Quote, cases are pending for 188 defendants following the acquittal of six defendants at the end of the first trial in December. The government explained in its latest court filing that it planned to proceed with charges, including felony counts, against 59 defendants, but would file a motion to dismiss the indictment in the remaining 129 cases. Assistant U.S. Attorney Jennifer Kerkhoff, the lead prosecutor, wrote that the government had decided to dismiss the majority of the cases, quote, in light of the legal rulings by the court and the jury's verdicts in the first trial of these cases, unquote. The U.S. Attorney's Office told the court that it would focus its efforts now on defendants who allegedly engaged in, quote, identifiable acts of destruction, violence, or other assaultive conduct, unquote, participated in planning violence and destruction, or who knowingly participated in what's known as black bloc tactics in order to aid violence and destruction, unquote.
Germany, RWE compound sabotaged, from Act for Freedom Now. RW is a German electricity company. Quote, we are a group of autonomous anarchists. We are nature defending itself, acting to protect the Hambacher Forest and the world from RWE and capitalism. In this action, an area of RWE was destroyed. The area was previously part of the forest. RWE cut all the trees, destroyed the habitat of the living beings, built new structures, fenced it off, and observed it with cameras. These structures would help them to destroy the rest, 226 hectares, of the 12,000-year-old forest, originally 5,500 hectares, for their profit with lignite brown coal, which produces 90 million tons of CO2 per year. The area was fenced with infrared cameras and alarm systems guarded. In it were material containers and a generator. As partially readable in the police report, the fences were removed and the generator destroyed. Also, attention was donated to the containers, unquote.
Media, call out for conflictual wisdom, a second try. From It's Going Down. Quote, the following is a call out for contributions on a new publication called Conflictual Wisdom. A second attempt was made last year for contributions, but the project was delayed. The submission email is now conflictualwisdom@protonmail.com. Both new and original articles on the subject of overcoming hopelessness, trauma, or disappointment as anarchists for the long term are welcome. The deadline is mid-February. If you plan to write an article specifically for this, they ask that you notify them in advance. I'm not sure exactly what to expect from posting this, if anything at all. I suppose that is why this project is interesting. Yet to give some idea, I am requesting articles, essays, rants, or general written catharsis on the subject of continuing struggle as anarchists, regardless of the inevitable bitterness and helplessness that comes for some with time. I am looking for writing that deals with existential issues as revolutionaries, that does not recite the typical rhetoric. However, I am open to that as well. Unquote.
Working Class Democracy, from Anonymous. This is an announcement of an excerpt from the book On Anarchism, Dispatches from the People's Republic of Vermont, with pieces by David Van Duysen, who edited the Black Bloc papers, and by the Green Mountain Anarchist Collective, which Duysen is a member of. These writings are firmly in the leftist, pro-democracy, pro-union slash workers' power version of anarchism. Quote, as Vermont's once powerful manufacturing base, which formerly included highly productive towns from Brattleboro to Springfield to Newport, has increasingly jumped ship for the super-exploited labor markets of Mexico and China, the economy in this small New England state, population 621,115, has become increasingly reliant upon an expanding service and retail sector to offset massive job loss. Of course, the vast majority of these jobs pay a fraction of what they are replacing and carry few to no benefits. In addition, 79% of Vermont businesses employ 9 or fewer workers. Because of the separateness and sheer quantity of these jobs, and because of the small number of employees who labor in each individual shop, most of the traditional unions have not been interested in expending their limited resources to organize these workers. This stands true throughout the nation. For many unions, such endeavors represent an untried gamble that they are currently not willing to take, even if that is where the majority of the labor force is increasingly situated, unquote.
Podcasts, Friendly Anarchism, number 32, Conflict Resolution, Dance, and True Prosperity with Sophia, January 8th, 2018. An hour and 13 minutes. This episode is on conflict resolution and points out that people can have very different needs for resolving conflict. Written versus in person is the example they use. Two friends talking about a topic. They stay on topic and some of it is interesting and they're thoughtful about it, but it still goes on a bit long and is pretty rambling at times. Dance is brought up as a type of communication and as a way to learn how to be around people. And true prosperity is, of course, being happy and doing meaningful things with one's life. At an hour in, it becomes a discussion about being queer and relating to people in faith communities, particularly Christian ones. This is the first time that I've heard this podcast, so maybe it's unusual, but this episode at least is quite personal. Their anarchy is not mine, but sometimes it's nice to have a view on how other anarchists think without having to argue about it.
Anarchy Radio, January 16, 2018. An hour, a consistent voice in a changing world.
Free Radical Radio Books Podcast, Episode 2, The Still Life with Woodpecker by Tom Robbins, an hour and 14 minutes. This book, quote, is a wet dream for any of us who love the outlaw, who believe that an individual human life can still be romantic, and that groupthink and humorlessness are the real evils of our world. Tom Robbins is a strange man for anarchists to read, but if we can accept the good with the bad and the funny with the serious, then we can forgive or at least understand Tom Robbins' tendency toward New Age hippie fallacies. We can look more deeply into this and appreciate his keen insights into the ways each of us surrender to ourselves, others, and society, and the ways it is possible to free ourselves from these same forces. How can we not love a book that begins with an outlaw coming out of bombing retirement to blow up the biggest meeting of the leftist minds he dubs the Care Fest, a collection of liberals, the Dalai Lama, Ralph Nader, and all those in the world who seek to better the world by controlling it? Bernard Rangel only has one life philosophy, yuck or yum, and he lives by it. This book is an exploration into the heart of a collectivist and an individualist, one who is a world saver and one who knows how to live in the world, unquote. This write-up is by someone who seems unable to find a conflict that doesn't require taking a side. Sometimes the interesting part is living in the conflict rather than choosing one side over the other. The most recent iteration of Free Radical Radio continues to poke anarchists to explore good fiction with an anarchist perspective, which is valuable.
Of the week, Trump. Everybody's doing it, so let's do it too. Let's talk about Donald Trump. As anarchists, what are we to make of this guy? Is this guy the new Hitler of the 21st century? Or is he just a total idiot and ultimately inconsequential? Or is Trump a non-issue, but the Pandora's box that he opened of blatant racism, xenophobia, and the alt-right the real threat that we need to take seriously? Perhaps Trump is to be celebrated because he is eroding people's trust and faith in electoral politics and the federal government. Or perhaps Trump is a danger so great that it is worthwhile for anarchists to get out the vote in this year's midterm elections and or the 2020 presidential elections. Perhaps this whole thing is just one big elaborate distraction from the real problem, and we really shouldn't be talking about this guy at all. Or perhaps not taking the Trump phenomenon seriously is just making things worse. Maybe the answers have a little bit of all of the above.
Well, to be honest, so many different perspectives are articulated. It's pretty hard to not be like, okay.
Yeah.
Because I do fall pretty traditionally on the side of the spectrum that says, if we just ignore them, perhaps at some point they'll go away. And,
it's worked so well in the past.
And Trump does make it extremely difficult to ignore. That is the one thing, is he's really made mainstream media really interesting to watch over the past year. Obviously, the New York Times and Stephen Colbert are benefiting greatly from his term in office. Mm-hmm. This is not just another boring Republican, mm-hmm. which, even though Bush was less so than Reagan, by and large, the old white guys that dominate the Republican Party, they're boring. Until someone radical like Rand or a Paul make it to office who are really bright and have a vision, I think we're just going to get clownish figures like this. And of course, ultimately the issue has not been Trump, but Trump has put some things into motion that are very terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
I think that if I were going to start itemizing them, I'd probably start with divisions that are under him. What's it called? The cabinet.
Or the cabinet.
The people he's chosen for the cabinet are basically, they are successfully destroying the functions that they're in place for.
Mm-hmm.
So the real question for anarchists, is there a way that the federal government can be dismantled that looks anarchistic? Or are we going to continue to be the far left wing of the Democratic Party that argues that we somehow are aiming for some sort of soft landing, that the government grows to such a point that it becomes undifferentiated from all of the services we would like it to provide to us? And I think that Trump is forcing us to answer this question in a way that understandably makes us uncomfortable. I don't have an answer to this question, but I do think it's a central anarchist question in terms of, if we're going to talk about mainstream politics, this is the question we should be asking.
Really? I'm not so sure. I think that's the question we should be asking. But I also, I have just taken joy every time he puts in place another successful rich business person who's an absolute idiot and completely unqualified to do the job that they've been hired for. Because my assumption out of that is that this is one more part of the government, one more piece of bureaucracy that's not going to function the way that it should function. I think this is good news. I think this is all good news. I don't know that it's how anarchists win. But I do know that this is a massive machine that has many moving parts, and they have to kind of, you know, hum away as best they can for things to actually get done. And I relish in the notion that these things aren't humming and things aren't getting done.
Okay, so let's talk about two different examples. As many people know, I'm from Michigan, which is DeVos country. Mm-hmm. DeVos, her family actually owns a big chunk of Western Michigan where I grew up. And her worldview is very informed by the Dutch Christian Reformed Church, which is a Calvinist sect. And she is now in charge of the education system from top to bottom. And the argument to make from your perspective would be, it's sort of funny watching her flounder and not be all that talented at running a big bureaucracy. I've even heard rumor that she is considering resigning because she thought she was going to be able to take more actions than she's been able mm-hmm. to take. On the flip side, I think high school teachers, you know, obviously we have a teacher who lives nearby who doesn't seem to be impacted yet, but it does seem like, you know, if charter schools are going to be a thing, they're going to be a thing pretty damn soon, mm-hmm. and that she is arguably dismantling, like she's accepted a huge budget reduction, mm-hmm. which, you know, has to play out somewhere, but I'm not sure I've seen it yet.
I think everyone knows it's going to play out in public schools.
No, sure, but where? Like, is it going to be in high school? Is it going to be elementary school?
Yeah, I haven't heard anything about that yet either.
So, you know, if his goal was to reduce the federal government spending on education, mission accomplished.
Right.
And, I mean, perhaps that's it. That's all there is to say. So I'm not sure how... So you're saying this is a good thing because why?
If the point to all of this is no government, or we'll even say less government, then the reality of that is these things have to stop. Things have to stop working. The government has to stop being in play or in play less. These things have to stop. Like you need less function. Over a long enough timeline, if it just kept going, you would envision that this would be, you know, less and less money, less and less involvement, less and less government actually being effective. And I mean, isn't that what we want? Don't anarchists want the government to go away?
Well, of course. I mean, like, that's the same question I asked earlier, and I'm not sure.
Oh, then I didn't understand part of your question. That's fine. That's me then.
So just to restate it, is the anarchist position that we are the far left of the Democratic Party and we want government services to expand? Like, in other words, we want all of our resources spent on education and less spent on the war machine, as an example.
Uh-huh.
Or are we kind of on board with the Republican plan that says, let's destroy this motherfucker from the inside?
Right.
And what we're looking at right now looks like what that destruction is going to look like.
Right. Yeah, I think it would be nice if the government would put its money in the places that I want it to and not in the places that I don't want it to, but it's not going to work that way. And so as is my ilk, it's just got to go. It's got to be all or nothing. You don't get to pick and choose. And if you want nothing, then this is the beginning of the crumbling, the dismantling from inside. And you want to keep pushing things in that direction. And the inevitable consequence of that is messy and terrible and awful. I don't know how you have a revolution that's clean and easy.
So you actually see this as the first step that could lead to a revolutionary transformation.
No. Because eventually, a smarter Republican or an actual Democrat are going to sit in that chair, and things are going to start to slowly go back to the way that they were. Like, most of his Republican comrades don't like what he's doing because they believe that the government needs to function and recognize all the ways that it's not. So a lot of what he's broken, even if a Republican gets elected, they're going to fix it. So this is just a moment in time. But I guess politically for me, I think it's an important moment in time.
Well, I think that the other thing that's fascinating this week is, you know, this week his sort of tabloid existence is catching up to him. Right, there's both this porn star that has come out saying that she had an affair with him, and then that what was the other thing?
Oh, I don't know.
That was another thing too. Anyways, it's interesting to sort of see this. You know, most responsible parties involved in this conversation seem to think that, you know, he's out of control, he's out of hand,
right,
and that. And that he's going to be stopped.
Sure.
And that perhaps a scandal like these are going to be the things that stop him, rather than, you know, dealing with the Russians or or something that more
some legitimate investigation that would move towards impeachment.
Something that looks like Watergate, right?
Right.
Like, instead it's going to be a 25th Amendment sort of a closure on this deal.
Right.
Do you have any thoughts or opinions about that, or whether it matters from a perspective of questioning the federal system?
I don't think he's going to be impeached. I'm also not convinced that he's going to actually run again.
Oh, you think he might bow out?
I think he might bow out. I recently read an article from people in his campaign camp who were very frank about the fact that it was fun for him and he never thought or wanted to win.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of evidence from inside that he doesn't like this that much. It's not as much fun as he thought it would be. He doesn't get to do as much as he thought he would do. And he's a rich New Yorker. And I really think that this was a toy that he wanted to buy to prove that he could and then do what he wanted to do with it. But he didn't actually want to have to do any work for it. In case you're not really that clear, rich New Yorkers, they don't actually work that hard. So I think this is more work than he's done in a long time. And he would get a lot of support from the party if he didn't run again.
Sure.
Ultimately, does it matter in the grand scheme of things? No.
Oh, you don't think it matters?
No. I think it would be interesting if he got 4 more years from watching the train crash perspective, from how much more can he break than he's already broken? How much, you know, can he actually maybe dismantle something so far and so much that it is permanently broken? Mm-hmm. That might be an interesting experiment to watch. But I think if he ran again, he would probably get reelected.
I don't think so.
I think the people who are being served by him being in office and the people who put him there the first time are... you know, it's almost like he's the president of the times. He's the president that we got the president we deserved.
Right.
This is, you know, the Twitter, Facebook version of politics. This is what you get. And I don't see that changing anytime soon.
Oh, I think it's going to change, personally.
Okay. I mean, I could see an extra aggressive rallying on the part of his opposition. Because, of course, last time around, his opposition, nobody actually thought he would win.
Correct.
So I could see that being what makes the change. But in terms of the base that got him there being any different, and I actually think they'd probably be bigger than they were the first time.
Yeah, I think the numbers actually disprove all of that.
Do they? But,
I mean, I think...
I'm not paying attention.
Yeah. I'm paying too much attention, but I just spent this big, long drive listening to podcasts
and podcasts. Lots of podcasts about politics.
Yeah, but I will say that I do think that he has changed the future of mainstream politics, but I think that probably the next, you know, 2 or 3 cycles is going to look like even more... Like, it's either going to look like more and more boring candidates, or it's going to look like more and more exciting candidates.
Right.
Like, so for instance, I've been very interested in watching the interest in Oprah. Right. And, you know, the thing about Oprah is that everyone who voted for Obama is going to vote for her. Mm-hmm. Everyone who voted for Clinton is going to vote for her, right? In other words, she'd be the first female president. And then finally, she has as much money, if not more, than Trump does to throw to throw at the problem.
That's true.
And I don't think that I actually think that the racists and all the scumbags and the douches that voted for Trump and that everyone sort of points to as being like, you know, this is the conflict that's at the heart of America. I don't think that those people have as much fire in their belly as people claim that they do, and that this was really like a last spurt, and a lot of it was because people were not excited to go to the polls for Hillary,
right,
even though she won the popular vote.
Right.
And that said, you know, I'm still thinking the demographics matter, and perhaps the Republicans have sealed up so many different ways in which to play this game that they're ahead of like what all the mainstream math says.
Sure.
You know, but I tend to think that, you know, the country is becoming more and more urban and more and more blue, quote unquote.
Right.
But again, like, I just know what the sort of mainstream politics tells me, because in fact, I don't care, because as an anarchist, I actually don't think any of this has shit all to do with anarchism.
Right.
I will, just to sidebar before you go on, if you didn't notice, I think the gerrymandering thing is really interesting, and the way in which the Republicans really played that long-term game of drawing the lines. Mm-hmm. And if you didn't hear, about 2 or 3 weeks ago, the federal court struck down the lines in North Carolina.
No, I didn't hear that.
And then yesterday, the Supreme Court
upheld them. Huh. Wow. Yeah. No, I was just going to say that whatever notions of prediction based on whatever information we have about who might be next, I think Oprah breaks all that.
Yeah.
I think if Oprah genuinely runs and the Democratic machine gets behind her, she's probably going to win.
It would be hard. I mean, yeah, it would be
hard. Which, on some level, actually for me is almost the best outcome of all scenarios. It would be amazing, and it would be hilarious. And
therapist president.
Oh my God, yeah.
Pop therapist president.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, that would be kind of fantastic. And a whole different kind of train wreck.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
It would be the train wreck of hugs.
No. There's no train wreck of hugs. We don't get to do that. That's just, no. A train wreck's a train wreck, and the hugs are not involved. So, no.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The podcast is the effort of many people. This week, the podcast was sound edited by Lino Mabel, written by Jackie. The editorial was written by Chisel, narrated by Chisel and a friend. Thanks to Aragorn and Ariel for their help with the topic of the week. Contact us at podcast@anarchistnews.org. To learn more, books, pamphlets, and other anarchist material are available at littleblackcart.com. News and up-to-the-minute commentary are always at anarchistnews.org.